Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. It is Rich Wilson. I'm here with Fantasy. What am I here with? Fantasy Baseball Live, but this is a special show. So if you're usually here to catch our traditional Sunday night podcast where we talked about closers last Sunday, this ain't it. This is a special podcast where we are talking for Dynasty League owners, the Dynasty League rookie draft. So if this is what you're looking for, awesome. I know it's probably one of the more requested podcasts that I do and lists that I do because everybody wants to know kind of the order in which they should be selecting, doing a redraft in the Dynasty League, or some people call it a rookie draft. I kind of think I like that after listening to all the feedback. I think I like that better than a Dynasty League redraft. I know I play in actually starting my fifth one this evening as we kick off our traditional draft. The way that we do it and the rules that I will use for this particular podcast is anybody who was signed after last year's draft is eligible to be drafted this year. So that's obviously the Gurriel brothers. Eric Thames is in there. A couple of Cuban immigrants that signed are in there. And obviously all the players who were drafted in last June's rookie draft are eligible in our league to be drafted. So those are our rules. That's how I will kind of do this podcast. I know your rules might differ. This might not apply. I mean, maybe an Eric Thames doesn't apply to you. Doesn't apply very well to me either. I just don't know what to do with him. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But that's what I'm going to be doing, going through those 30 players, just 30 players, exactly what I did last year. I will also post the list out on Prospect 361, hopefully within 24 hours, so that you'll be able to take a look at that list as you're going through your drafts and either agree with me or disagree. It's I'm not saying I'm right, because this stuff is is, you know, two parts logic and research, and one part black magic, as we see now with poor Alex Reyes going down. It looks like, I mean, I know he's going for a second opinion, but it looks like it is going to be ulnar collateral ligament tear, so meaning that he's probably going to need some form of Tommy John surgery. Now, there's a new form. There's actually a new Tommy John surgery that is out there that was done on one player, Manias, I think that's how you pronounce it, with the Cardinals, where they did a different type of surgery, and it only was a 6 months recovery period. And I know there's workouts for him. I think it's either this week or might have even been last week with teams looking at him to see if the velocity is back and so forth. If that's the case, that could potentially change the entire equation around for pitchers going down with Tommy John surgery. Now, in the case of Alex Reyes, if he needs it, given that the recovery period for the other Tommy John surgery is 6 months, he might as well go for the full Monty and actually get it done, because that will hopefully get him back by midseason next year. But it's just another stark reminder of drafting pitchers high, counting on young pitchers. It's tough. And yes, I think there was a conversation out on Facebook on our Facebook group, which is prospect361.com Dynasty League groups, or could have been on my Twitter. It would be Rich Wilson P361. How'd you like that way to squeeze my squeeze my information in? But it was on, like, it seems so random with pitchers going down with Tommy John surgery when you see Chris Sale going out and pitching the way he does, the mechanics he does. It almost seems like it's random. And I really get the point. But I think if you might want to take a look at, maybe Chris Sale is just an outlier. Maybe he's the exception to the rule. And there's always going to be exceptions. The one thing that we know is if you throw really hard, the chances of having Tommy John surgery early in your career is very high. And we saw Gerrit Cole with some elbow wonkiness last year. We've even seen Noah Syndergaard, heavens to Betsy, as the old folks would say, having some discomfort in his elbow over the last couple of years. And he's going as a top 5-7 pitcher this year. You know, you just never know. And it's dicey. So a lot of that logic I've used in trying to rank players that you might take in a rookie draft. I love Jason Groom, throws hard. He's a lefty. I like all that really good stuff. I saw him pitch in New Jersey last spring, and he pitched a no-hitter. It's my first no-hitter I've ever seen. Granted, it was only 7 innings, but it was my first no-hitter I've ever seen. All the baseball games I've gone to, I've never seen a no-hitter. And I want to say he struck out 21. I mean, it was totally ridiculous. But if I'm in a fantasy league draft, a dynasty league draft, and I might like him more than any other player on this list, I take him ahead of Nick Senzel or Corey Ray or, you know, even Blake Rutherford, even Kevin Mason. Do I take him before that, or do I, you know, kind of risk adjust it and push him down a little bit and say, gee, maybe if I won my fantasy league last year or I'm drafting a little bit lower and I've got a really good team, I can maybe take a gamble on a guy like that and put him on my squad. But if I'm in trouble and I really need some studs to anchor my team, I don't think I take a Jason Groom that high. So just to, you know, my thinking and playing a dynasty league. So my first dynasty league I started, I think it was 2010. We did our initial draft, and it's now what, 2017. So I'm going on my 7th year in playing. And this, the experience I've had with these redrafts is a couple of thoughts. Is one is I rarely take a pitcher first. Yu Darvish, when he came over from Japan, yeah, of course, take him number one. But I discount pitchers a lot in those redrafts. I discount pitchers a lot in regular drafts and traditional dynasty drafts. I will do that this evening as I'm going through my draft. Now let me back up. In a traditional fantasy league where you've got a 12-month window, yeah, I a little less so. I'll take some gambles with pitchers. But a dynasty league, I mean, those guys, you're going to own them forever, unless you trade them away, obviously, and you hope your dynasty league stays up for a while. I got to be a little cautious on drafting pitchers because, you know, they're out for 2 years and they get delayed. And I mean, Hunter Harvey's a great example. I did pick him fairly late in a first round in a redraft, and he's never seen the major leagues, and he was a, you know, top flight pitcher and just went down with Tommy John surgeries, lost for the entire season again. So it's a guy who will probably come back from surgery, drafted as a high schooler, as a 25-year-old. So it seems like it's been forever since he was drafted, and tons of talent just cannot stay healthy. And that's what you get with pitchers. So, you know, it's always a dicey move there, but that's a little bit of thinking around that. The other thing that in a dynasty league redraft or dynasty rookie, you know, I think if you go back and listen to the podcast I did last year, and I talked a long time about where to take Bung Ho Park and Kenta Maeda versus Andrew Benintendi, Alex Bregman, and Dansby Swanson. You took a look at those three players and you went, wow, those are elite college bats who can really hit. They're going to go through the system very quickly. Kenta Maeda and Bung Ho Park are going to start in the major leagues immediately. Where do you take these guys? Let me throw in Brandon Rogers as well. And then the third category is Brendan Rogers, who it was a kid coming out of high school and Coors could really hit, probably go through the system relatively quickly, but he's probably 3 years away. And if you were to stack rank them in terms of upside and talent, Brendan Rogers is probably at the top of the list. Even as good as Bregman and Benintendi and Swanson have turned out to be, I think the upside, the ceiling, is still the highest on Brendan Rogers. So my advice again this year, again after playing in so long in these kinds of leagues, you got to go with these guys that are drafted in the rookie draft in last year's June draft over the established player. Again, unless it's an exceptional player like a Yu Darvish. Jonas Cespedes might have been one of those players as well. Particularly a college bat that you think will get through quickly. Those are the guys that I'm targeting at the top of the list. So we go to this year's list, and who do I have? It's Nick Senzel, who to me feels a lot like Alex Bregman with a little bit more speed. Bregman probably a slightly better hitter, but Senzel was drafted, again, by Reds, number two overall pick. I think he's going to move through their system very quickly. I think you will see him in 2018. You might even see him this year. If the Reds were any better, you would probably see him. That's the guy that I would target first. And I do think there's 2020 kind of potential with him, with a really nice batting average. Is that a superstar? No. I mean, would you love him to have 30 home runs or 30 stolen bases? It'd be better to have both. I don't think you get that. But I think you get a really good player, somebody who will go through the system quickly. So to me, as opposed to, you know, last year I said it was the Benintendi, Bregman, Swanson trifecta at the top. Or if you were a long way away and wanted to shoot for the moon, it was Brendan Rodgers at the top, then followed by those guys who are directly going into the major leagues with Kenta Maeda and Bunko Park. I think this year, Nick Senzel sits above everybody else. That's the guy you want. Coming in at number two is another college player, and that's Corey Ray. Now, Corey Ray obviously tore his meniscus, will probably get off to a slow start this year, but this guy probably even liked the tools slightly more than Senzel. I mean, the home run potential, the kind of the talent, this home run and stolen base potential is probably much higher with Corey Ray than they are with Nick Senzel, but the hit tool is definitely a step back. So that's why I put Senzel first and Corey Ray second, but Corey Ray definitely has a higher ceiling, but if I take a look at the mix of it, I would take Nick Senzel second. The third person off the list might surprise you. And I've taken a little bit of heat on this in my top 100 because this guy did not appear. But here's my logic. Usually you're drafting at the top of the pile. You don't have a very good team. And if you're 2 to 3 years away from competing, you pick the Brendan Rodgers. You pick the guy who has the potential home run, the guy that's there. Here, Nick Senzel and Corey Ray, to me, that combination of ceiling and floor together, this makes them safe, nice picks and anchors. But if you want the true home run in this year's draft, it's Kevin Mason. He is I know you guys are probably laughing. Some of you driving, some of you running just ran off the road. Kevin Mason is 16, just turned 17 years old, has never played a game in the States. But look, a Braves signed him for $4.25 million. That's kind of Nomar Mazzaro kind of level. Everybody's heard the comps of Miguel Cabrera. I mean, it's a fellow Venezuela. You know, everything that I've heard, and it's primarily been through Ben Battle, I'm not going to lie, with Baseball America. Great hit tool. Tremendous power, probably no speed. He's playing shortstop. That's probably not going to last. Why not go with the home run with Kevin Mason? I have the fourth pick in one of our Dynasty League redrafts, and if he's there, I'm taking him. This flat out going to take him. I know all of my league mates listen to this, which means he'll go in the top three, but if he is there, I am going to take him because I'm still building that team out. I think Mason will be a guy that gets through the system in 3 or 4 years. I know that particular league is going to be around forever, and I'm just going to wait it out. Is it a risky pick? For sure, because many of you would say, well, why didn't he make your top 100, Wilson? Why are you taking number three overall? Because, again, if I have a lousy team and it's going to take me a while to rebuild, I'm going to take a gamble on Kevin Mason. Plus, in a fantasy league, I believe it's interesting. You could sit there and say, well, it'll be 4 or 5 years before he contributes to the major league. But the way the currency works in a fantasy, this is very, very important. He will have currency value this year because the hype has been so high on him. He will have currency value in a year or two when he becomes a top 25 prospect, if the hype is all true. That's why I think you have to consider taking him fairly high. It's because of that currency. Just don't think, oh, gee, it's going to be 4 or 5 years until he's going to be ready and contributing to my fantasy team. You can get him, hold on to him for, you know, a year and a half or 2 years, and then flip him for somebody who might help you sooner. I think he's got that much upside. Coming in at number four is a guy I just love a lot, and that is Blake Rutherford with the New York Yankees. New York Yankees are rebuilding. You can say, well, he's going to be blocked and so forth. He is a high school player, and he's a little bit further away, but he's an older high school player, so he's already 19 years old. He's got super skills, and you know, I think the kid can really already has very good pitch recognition and a guy that I do believe will move relatively quickly through the Yankees organization. I like him a lot, and it's a guy that, again, a little bit older player. I don't think the Yankees will sit around and mess around and have him play an entire season in rookie ball. I think you'll see him potentially break in low A with the Charleston team, and you know, you could see him in high A by the end of the season. You know, if that's a little aggressive, definitely high A 2018, upper minors in 2019, and seeing the major leagues, you know, that end of 2019, 2020, which, you know, isn't bad. Mickey Moniak, who was the number one overall pick last year, comes in at number five for me. Similar time frame as Blake Rutherford. I mean, look, Mickey Moniak was picked number one for several reasons. One, very high floor. This guy is going to be a very, very good baseball player. From a fantasy standpoint, you know, I don't know if the power and speed is as much as high as it is there for Blake Rutherford or Corey Ray, or, you know, obviously not Nick Senzel. So that's why Mickey Moniak comes in at number five. Very good player, probably in the same time frame, 2019, 2020, making it to the major leagues. But, you know, I've said it from the very beginning. I could be proven wrong. I like Blake Rutherford better. Those two were kind of friends and companions out in California playing the circuit. I do like him better. So, but anyway, that's where I have Mickey Moniak slotted in. Okay. Number six is Kyle Lewis, who is the number 11th overall pick. And many of you, if maybe this is your first time listening to this Dynasty League rookie podcast and going, well, why don't you just go in order 1 through, you know, 30 on the first round and just draft that way? And, you know, clearly the baseball teams have a better idea than this crazy Wilson character does. Why not pick Mickey Moniak 1, Nick Senzel 2, Ian Anderson 3, Riley Pint 4, et cetera? Well, this is where fantasy baseball is different than real baseball. You have to look at the risk, true risk, college players that are going to help you get to your team a little, or help your fantasy team a little quicker. So you're taking a look at all of those particular elements. Plus, sometimes, like with Dansby Swanson, went number one overall last year. I didn't like him as much as Andrew Benintendi or Alex Bregman last year. I like those guys better from a fantasy standpoint, just because Swanson, I think, is more of a 15-15 guy. And I think those guys have higher upside because in general, we don't care about defense in the fantasy game. So Kyle Lewis comes at number 11, tremendous power potential. There's just a lot to like with Kyle Lewis. He did unfortunately have an ACL tear, so there's a good chance that he misses a significant part of this coming season. You could see him in the second half, which unfortunately, you know, hurts his stolen base potential. Again, a college player, how much has he really come back? I kind of comped him to a Jock Peterson type of player, kind of a middling batting average, let's call it 250, 260. He does know how to take a walk. He has good plate control. So you could see a mid 300s, low 300s on base percentage. So an on base percentage league, he doesn't kill you. And of course, there's going to be some power there. So Kyle Lewis comes in next. Here's my first pitcher off the board. And if you don't want to take this guy this early, I get it. But Jason Groom, in my humble opinion, was the best overall talent in last year's draft. Now, I know that he dropped all the way to 12. The Red Sox came in and swooped him up. But I saw the guy pitch, and tremendous arm, very poised on the mound. Pitcher, you know, what's the likelihood of him having Tommy John surgery for the major leagues or before he's established in the major leagues? Probably 50-50. I'm making that up. I have nothing to back that up. There's a 50-50 chance that he gets delayed a year, year and a half because of Tommy John surgery. But he's good. He's really good. And I don't believe the makeup concerns at all. I think it's all made up. And I think because of that, the Red Sox got a steal. So again, if you're picking number seven and you know you want to gamble a little bit, I think Jason Groom is a nice guy to gamble with. Coming in at 8 and 9, and I put these guys here just because I'm not sure where to put them, is Yuli Gurriel and Eric Thames. I mean, Yuli Gurriel is, you know, both are over 30 years old, established players in a dynasty league math. Again, I have now 6 years experience, going on 7 years experience, to say that's old. And if it's the last piece to your puzzle and you're picking number two or three and you desperately need somebody who's got third base eligibility, then by all means, pick Yuli Gurriel. I think there'll be some pop there, a little bit of speed. He can definitely hit. He's going to be playing on a very good team. Pick him there. But to me, I think he deserves to be at the bottom of the list because that's usually where the better teams are drafting, at least the better finishing teams last year in your dynasty league. And therefore, I would think they're more beneficial to teams like that than teams that are rebuilding, which are usually your poor teams at the top. Eric Thames, I have no idea. I mean, look, Japanese leagues, Korean leagues, they're not the same as the major leagues, particularly the Korean leagues. On Bungho Park, we saw that. We see it with almost all of those guys. That's more like high A. That's kind of the competition there. So you know, Kang had some success when he first came over. Hunjin Ryu had a little bit of success when he first came over. But in general, you know, you don't see like your – overall talent come out. We get all excited because the Japanese player like Ichiro came out. Well, maybe it's the next Ichiro. Yeah, I don't know. Eric Thames, obviously a guy that I remember when we played for the Blue Jays and kind of was just okay. Always had a lot of power. I mean, will he have a lot of power? Will he perform in Milwaukee? I just don't know. I don't know how the game's going to translate. So it's completely a wild card. I put him in at 8-9. I could be completely wrong. I'm not sure what to tell you. I doubt I will draft them in a rookie league a rookie draft. I think I'm drafting pretty much in three of the four leagues. I'm drafting at the back half, kind of in the 9-10 range. So they might be there when I go to draft. People will be going off my perf list. Would I take them there? I might, but I don't know. I've seen too many Bungho Parks as opposed to you Darvishes out there, and I just get a little concerned. Coming in at number 10 is a left-handed pitcher for the Miami Marlins. I think the Marlins got a good one here, and that is Braxton Garrett. He didn't play last season. I think the stuff is, you know, low 90s, left-handed pitchers. I think that's absolutely fine. He's definitely got a hammer curve, which is his signature pitch. Again, a high school player with a lot of upside. I go Groom followed by Garrett all the way, you know, kind of towards the back half of a first-round pick. I finally put my first two pitchers in there. Another pitcher is Matt Manning coming in at number 11. He was the 9th overall pick this past year. And a guy that I like nearly as much as Braxton Garrett. In fact, I almost debated putting Manning in front of Garrett, decided not to. Comes from a really rich athletic family. Father played basketball, brother plays basketball. I mean, it's whenever you hear about those bloodlines, you know, they're not always true, but boy, more times than not, The bloodlines, the athletic bloodlines, just are significant. So I got Matt Manning there. Coming in at number 12 is another guy who fell in the draft, and that's Delvin Perez. He's a shortstop, plays for your St. Louis Cardinals. I like this cat a lot. Unfortunately, little PED, bad testing, and he dropped. I think there's goodness here. He's definitely going to be a great defensive player, which in fantasy we don't really care about, but that does at least give him playing time. So I think there is definitely some stolen bases. He's got a little pop. He can definitely hit. He's probably 3 or 4 years away, so you have to kind of include that into your equation. But, as you've seen from this list, not a lot of shortstops on here. Perez is, I believe, the first shortstop on this list. Yeah, Kevin Mason is currently listed as shortstop. He ain't going to play shortstop. Delvin Perez is going to be a really nice player. And, in fact, I think he might go through the system a little bit more quickly than everybody thinks. Number 13 is Riley Pint. He'd be much higher on this list if he didn't pitch in Coors Field. But he pitches in Coors Field. I can try to convince myself. In fact, I did a mini podcast once on John Gray and how I think John Gray will be a much better pitcher than Coors and most other guys before him. It's still Coors Field. We still have a long history that, it's a half run to three quarters of a run worse, maybe more in that park. So Pint's got great stuff. Hitting triple digits on his fastball, was cradled when he was going through high school by his parents. They didn't let him play in a lot of the showcases because they wanted to kind of not overabuse the arm so he'd be healthy and so forth. Is that going to help? I don't know. It's a good test case. Probably not. I'll probably get the Tommy John surgery in the next 3 years. But it's a cat that you really, really got to like. Number 14 is Zach Collins. He's listed as a catcher. Does he stay a catcher in the White Sox organization? Definitely pop, strikes out a ton, gets on base a lot. If he stays a catcher, I like him. If he moves to first base, don't like him as much. So that's why he gets pushed down to number 14. Coming to number 15 is Lourdes Gurriel, who is, I believe it's Yuli Gurriel's younger brother. I'm not sure what to make of Lourdes. I've never seen him play. He's with Toronto. He's 22 years old, really good bat speed. He's got some pop, got a little bit of speed. If you said, gee, Rich, I want to take him before the string of pitchers that you just said, okay. I wouldn't take him before Jason Grum, I probably, I could consider taking him in front of Braxton Garrett, Thames, and Yuli Gurriel. I probably wouldn't take him in front of his. Well, yeah, probably wouldn't take him in front of my brother. But if you wanted to pick him number 9, I'd be okay with that. But I have him down on my pref list, down at number 15. So if I'm drafting at the back half of a 15-team rookie league, it would be a guy that I would definitely be targeting. Again, not a lot is known of this guy. Obviously, he has a history in Cuba, hasn't played for a while, yada, yada, yada. Toronto does have a tendency to go off and get high-ceiling guys, boom or bust kind of guys. I have heard from people that have seen Lourdes bat is that he's got holes in his swing, and there's a little bit of concern about that. That's another reason why I dropped him down in the list a bit. So let me go grab a quick drink of water. And when we get back, we're going to finish up the back half, 16 through 30. Hopefully you guys are enjoying this or getting some information out of it. Again, I hope to put the list out on Prospect 361 in the next 24 hours so that you can see it there. Hopefully it's just going to be a list with probably short little blurbs on it. So I'm not going to go through gory details because I've done that with almost every one of these players in the capsules when I wrote up the top 10. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed this. You might notice with my site, I've been debating what to do with my site. I'm getting so much traffic now, it feels stupid not to try to monetize it. So I've debated doing a subscription. I've also debated doing advertisements. So I basically work with WordPress, who does mine, and they have what they call a lightweight advertisement kind of set. And I talk with them, work through it, saw the kind of ads they run, and decided to go with that initially to see if it generate a little bit of income for the site as opposed to going to a subscription model. Down the road, I might go to a subscription model, and if I do that, then the people who search commercials and blah, blah, blah. But at some point, I hope everybody appreciates the fact that I write a lot of words on that, and it would be good to get a little bit of compensation, if nothing else, to defray the cost of all the scouting trips that I do. And that's all I want to do is break even on this, because at the moment I ain't breaking even. So you might start to see a few commercials out there, a few advertisements out there. That's why I've done it. And if I get enough revenue, I'll be able to pay Mr. McLeod a little bit of money as we go through this. So hopefully you won't hate me for doing that. I said I would only, when I first got in doing the blog, it's now been, I think this is my fifth year, that I would never run commercials unless it made sense. And I felt like it finally started to make a little bit of sense. And as opposed to other sites, it's not splattered with commercials all over the place and ads all over the place. So hopefully you'll find them unobtrusive. Hopefully you'll find them relative to, you know, to maybe what you're looking for. And if you love they're hawking out there, I don't have any say on the content that's put in there, then by all means, go visit that and go purchase stuff, because that's, quite frankly, that's how the world goes around. People have to buy stuff off the internet, off of television, in stores and so forth. That's how the economy goes and whatnot. And I heard an interview last night with the CEO of Visa, and talking about how good the world economy is and how much, because the economy, as everybody probably, I don't know if you realize it or not, it's a consumer-based economy. If people don't spend money, the economy doesn't move. We're not a producer-based economy. People have to consume stuff, particularly in the U.S., and that apparently is just roaring. People are buying stuff. Now, they're not buying as much stuff from a retail standpoint, but the e-commerce is just is what's really pulling the economy along. And, you know, so that's another reason. So you put these commercials, advertisements on my site, and hopefully it moves the e-commerce along a little bit and our economy along a little bit. And maybe I make a few bucks along the way. Coming in at number 16 is Cal Contrell with the Padres. He was selected number 8. Now, it's a guy that in 2015 had Tommy John surgery, really well thought of when he was, a few years ago in college. And so he blows out his elbow and really didn't pitch much going into the draft. And the Padres took a risk at him at 8. And I think they got a good one. I mean, this is a fastball changeup guy who pitched really well in his initial professional professional outing this pet in 2016. So I think it's worth the risk of picking him number 16. So if you're getting through the first round of your draft and he's sitting out there and you took a bat, maybe you took Nixon Cell number 1, or maybe he's still sitting out there after you took Corey Ray. I don't think it's a bad process to go college bat, college arm next, and even somebody coming back from Tommy John surgery. Justin Dunn is number 19, a Mets pitcher. Look, I've said it before, I'll say it again. You got to push up Mets pitchers. I mean, there's something going on in the Mets organization, their ability to draft really good talent and their ability to develop really good talent. I mean, they traded for Noah Syndergaard, but Noah Syndergaard is a superstar or soon to be a superstar. Jacob DeGrom won Rookie of the Year, really good pitcher. Hopefully they sub the his ulnar collateral ligament in the right spot, so pain is gone. Matt Harvey, Michael Fulmer was in the Mets organization. Remember that? I mean, they brought him along. Some of the minor leagues loved him. That's why I own him in two dynasty leagues. I drafted him last year when a lot was actually 2 years ago, but not a lot was known about him. And Justin Dunn, I think, is another guy that can follow in that footsteps. I mean, he's one of the kids I really like coming through the draft. And I think they got the Mets got him at 19. I'd be thrilled if I got him in the second round. College pitcher, smart guy, went to Boston College, yada, yada, yada. I think Boston College is the elite school in Boston. Boston University is the more traditional school that's there. So smart guy, good school, and you know, somebody that I like ahead of number 18, which is A.J. Puck. Was not a fan of A.J. Puck going into the draft. Big, tall guy with the Athletics, the Oakland A's selected him there. It was good value there. Throws hard, can't find the plate. So you like where he's pitching in Oakland, but I just worry that his control is, you know, he's got 30, 40 grade control. Until that improves, I worry about him progressing well, being beyond a number three, number four kind of pitcher. The Braves surprised everybody last draft and took Ian Anderson, number three overall. I have him down at number 19. From everything I hear, this guy is better than anyone thought coming into the draft. And while he was probably overdrafted by the Braves, he's got a lot of talent, and a guy that, you know, that Dynasty League owners, you know, should consider. Now, he is 3, maybe 4 years away. Obviously throws hard, good chance Tommy John, the whole thing doesn't have the kind of upside as the Riley Pines or Jason Grooms of the world and so forth. So that ceiling is not there. Floor might be a little higher just because yeah, I think he's got better control, doesn't throw as hard as those other guys. So, you know, we talked about Tommy John surgery. I just mentioned maybe he has it, maybe not, but you know, it throws 91, 92, maybe gets a 93, 94. Yeah. A good pitcher, not elite, but a guy that I think you should consider. Forrest Whitley with the Astros comes in at number 20. He was pitched pick number 17. As you guys know, that I'm a huge fan of the Astros, huge fan of their organization, how they develop players. They love Forrest Whitley, and they were thrilled when he fell to them at 17. He's got size. He's got a solid arsenal. He can throw strikes. He's a big kid, 6'7", 240 pounds, so he's fully developed. So there's probably not going to be any more ticks on the fastball. But I'm really going on what the Astros liked, I like. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I didn't know a lot about him coming out of the draft. And the Astros picked him, and immediately he becomes a guy that I monitor. So I threw him at number 20. Alex Kirilloff comes in at number 21. I wanted to put him in my top 100. He just missed. He probably would have made it with the Twins organization. Look, as much as I love like the Mets and what they're doing with pitchers, I don't like anything that the Twins are doing. Byron Buxton has not developed the way we think, and Max Kepler has. So I give them a little kudos there. What they're doing with Kenny Vargas makes no sense. Jose Berrios makes no sense. They just seem to be doing everything wrong. Maybe it's partially bad luck. I don't know. But as the Mets are touching, everything's turning to gold. Everything that the Twins are touching is not. Now, again, small sample size. You can say it's all going to correct everything. Talent kind of rises to the top. Alex Kirilloff can play. There's no two ways about it. Good bat speed, got some plus raw power. So the skills are definitely there. Again, probably 3, maybe 4 years away. Could hit 20 home runs, a little bit of speed as well. I like the player a lot. He's a Twin, so buyer beware. Number 22 comes Dane Dunning. He was the guy that was included in with the Lucas Giolito trade for Adam Eaton, and he's good. He was picked number 29, with the White Sox, and I thought it was a nice pickup from them. He was a relief pitcher with Florida, but somebody I think the White Sox will go to starting, and he might not be long for the minor leagues. Don't be surprised if we see him next year. So a guy that I like a lot. Obichette comes in at number 23. Yes, younger son of Dante Bichette. His older brother made a big scene coming in with the Yankees, but has really fizzled out to be probably a modest prospect, maybe not even a prospect anymore. Bobichette's a better player. And he was taken in the second round with the Blue Jays. So if you're looking for somebody who's maybe a little bit further down, Bichette can hit. He's got a big lower half. I think there's going to be some power there. So it's a guy that I would definitely push up into the second round of my fantasy draft. Dakota Hudson, right-handed pitcher with the Cardinals, pick number 34 overall. I got him slotted at number 24. I think he could be a mid-rotation starter, maybe a closer long-term. College pitcher, you like that, get through the system quickly, 6'6". And, you know, with Michael Wacha not being Michael Wacha anymore, maybe he turns it around. I don't know. Alex Reyes potentially going down. There'll be opportunities over the next 18 months for Dakota Hudson. Coming in next at number 25 is Will Benson with the Indians. 6'6", 220 pounds. Big kid, outfielder. Going to have some power, going to have some pop. I said in my write-up that he reminded me a little bit of Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge is a bigger dude than him, but he's big in it itself. So there will be strikeouts, but there is definitely plus raw power potential. And a guy that probably flying under the radar a little bit, but if you're looking, a high school player, so if you're going to wait a while, but a guy with I think, a lot of upside. Will Craig with the Pirates comes in at number 26. It's funny. I put his fantasy ceiling is unsure. I don't know why I did that. Probably needed to go back and update that and never got there. He's a first base guy, and that's probably where the rub might be. But he can hit, and there's going to be some pop there. So, I think that's somebody that I would feel comfortable drafting in the second round of my rookie league draft. Lucas Ursig, a second round pick for the Milwaukee Brewers. I know the Brewers love this guy. I liked him. He was going to make my emerging prospect, but I picked somebody else instead. I don't know why he did that. I mean, the Brewers are so deep that, it could have gone easily 15 deep in that top 10 write-up. There's a lot to like. I mean, he can definitely hit. He's got some power, some speed. So, I mean, you could see a 280, 290 hitter with 15 home runs, 15 stolen bases. That's a really nice player. And also probably move through the system fairly quickly as well. So kind of a low-risk guy. Ceiling's not as high as some other people on this list, but I like him. Matt, and I don't have to say this guy's last name. I think it's Matt Theus. I have never seen him play. Drafted by the Los Angeles Angels. Wow, an Angel makes one of my lists. That's impressive. Got him down as a corner infielder. He might move over to first base. In fact, he probably will move over to first base. Virginia kid. I think he's got a little pop, so you can see 20-25 home run, decent batting average. There'll be no stolen bases, obviously, with him. He also walks a lot, so this could be a guy that could be an on-base percentage guy with a little bit of pop, kind of a poor man's. Every time you hear that first base, you think of a very, very poor man's Joey Votto, poor man's Freddie Freeman. I think that's what we have with Matt Theus. Coming in at number 29, it's a guy you might not have heard of. It's Luis Almanzar, a 16-year-old kid that was drafted, was signed by the Padres. The Padres love this kid. Paid him $4 million. It's a kid that played a little bit in the States before moving to the Dominican to try to up his signing bonus. I think he did. If you recall, Lucius Fox did the same thing, and Lucius Fox has turned out to really, I rated him low, might not even rated him at all this year. Just really fell off, did not have a good season last year. But Luis Almanzar, I might not be saying his name correctly, but I know for a fact, because I've talked to people in the San Diego organization, that A.J. Preller loved this kid and just decided to break the bank with him and believes that he'll move through the system very quickly. He's got that great bat speed. Obviously needs to work on pitch recognition, which, you know, you could say that about any young player coming up. Last on this list is I'm going to go with Jose Miguel Fernandez, who just got signed by the Dodgers. He's a 27-year-old Cuban guy. He can really hit. And the Dodgers, you know, obviously, they spent a lot of money on, so I know they like him. So I've got him down as my number 30th player. That's the list. Hopefully you like this. I will say in general, this is not as exciting of a list as it was last year, particularly at the top. There's just not those four players and Brendan Rodgers and Andrew Benintendi, Dansby Swanson and Alex Bregman. We don't have those four guys here. We got Nick Senzel and maybe Corey Ray. So there's a more definitive number one, but Nick Senzel's not as good as those other four guys last year. Doesn't have the upside as those guys. Clear doesn't have the upside of when it was Bryce Harper and everybody else. But what this group has is depth. So there's some really good players. They might be pitchers. They might be high school pitchers. But like Matt Manning and Delvin Perez, Riley Pint, these guys are really good. They're going to be Major League Baseball players and be really good Major League Baseball players. Last year and some of the previous years, you got down to the back half of the first round or even in the second round, and you were gambling a little bit. This year, not so much. So if you've got multiple first-round picks, multiple second-round, I think you're going to make out really well in this particular draft. In fact, would I trade down? If I had the number one pick, I wouldn't. If I really wanted Kevin Mason, I would probably keep that top two, three, four pick. But I might consider trading down and picking up a couple of extra picks deeper in the first round or even in the second round. That would probably be the way I might play it. I do in one of my drafts, I've got three first-round picks. I think 4, 11, and 12 or something like that. And I'm trying to figure out, I think of that fourth pick, if Kevin Mason's there, that's the guy I'm going to pick. Probably, again, probably will not be there. But then I would probably go with some more established players, with those other picks. Let me just see what I have here. I think that one thing I think I've got, number 4, 11, and 13. So I'm really happy. And then I come back with 2, 4. So I've got 4 of the first 19 picks. I'm feeling really good in that particular draft. I'm going to get some really good players. So this to me is the year to have multiple lower first round picks, second round picks. And of course, with everything, it really starts to drop off in the third or fourth round. And again, if you've got suggestions, players that you want me to evaluate, where would you pick them later, please feel free to go out Prospect 361 and ask about that. Obviously, you can tweet at me, et cetera. So that's it. That's our show for this morning. It is, 6:15 here, West Coast time. It's been a blast doing this. Hopefully, you get some good information out of it. Again, feedback is always welcome. Want to go out and follow me at Rich Wilson P361. Hit our Facebook group at prospect361.com. Dynasty League groups. It's a really good site out there for exchanging information with a bunch of great fantasy players. And for those of you in Dynasty League groups, as your redrafts come up, good luck with that. If you're in a new Dynasty League startup, congratulations. This will be the most fun you'll ever have in a fantasy game. It's just fantastic to own these players for their life, to trade them. If you play in a, I've never played in a salary league, dynasty league. That sounds way fun because you've then got constraints on it. I think that would be an awesome format as well. But anyway, dynasty leagues are to me where it's at. I love it. Hopefully you found this podcast informative, and we will see you guys, everybody, back here on Sunday. We've got the awful mock draft coming up. I know everybody loves it. There's great information that comes out. It's a brutal broadcast for myself and Tim because we're trying to draft and trying to broadcast at the same time. And it's tough, man. I'm not going to lie to you. I will be exhausted after the show. But we will see you back on Sunday. Until then, be well.